The Honorable, the Chief Justice and the Associate Justices of the Supreme Court of the United States. Oyez, 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 all persons having business before the Honorable, the Supreme Court of the United States, are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the United States and this honorable court.
We are very pleased to have visiting with us this morning the Chief Justice of Australia, Stephen Gagler. Chief Justice Gagler, on behalf of my colleagues, welcome. Justice Barrett has the opinion of the court this morning in case 23909, Cosesis versus United States.
This case presents the question whether a defendant may be convicted of wire fraud, even if he did not intend to cause the victim net financial loss. Here are the facts. Mr. Cosesis, the defendant below, was a project manager for Alpha Painting and Construction Company. When Cosesis learned that the Pennsylvania Department of Transportation, I'll call that PennDOT, was soliciting bids for two painting projects in Philadelphia, he submitted a bid for each project on Alpha's behalf, and Alpha won the contracts. Because the federal government was partially funding the projects, PennDOT, and in turn Alpha and Cosesis, had to play by the federal government's rules, including its rules governing disadvantaged business participation. In short, federal grant recipients like PennDOT must ensure that socially and economically disadvantaged small businesses participate in the projects that the federal government funds. Consistent with this requirement, Alpha and Cosesis promised that they would obtain their painting materials from a disadvantaged supplier. They lied. As the government later learned, Alpha and Cosesis devised a scheme to obtain materials from a less expensive supplier that was not disadvantaged. And because they used fraudulent purchase orders and false compliance certifications to cover their tracks, PennDOT was none the wiser. The painting projects progressed and were eventually completed. And by the time the last coat of paint was dry, Alpha had turned a gross profit of over $20 million. PennDOT, for its part, was satisfied with Alpha's work. But then, the government discovered Alpha and Cosesis' disadvantaged business deception. Alpha and Cosesis were indicted for wire fraud, and after the jury rendered a guilty verdict, they moved for an acquittal, emphasizing that Alpha's paintwork had met expectations. They argued that PennDOT had received the full economic benefit of its bargain. Sure, Alpha might not have obtained its supplies from a disadvantaged business, but their scheme had not left PennDOT financially worse off. No matter, the government responded. The theory under which Alpha and Cosesis had been tried and convicted, what the parties call the fraudulent inducement theory, doesn't require the government to prove that the defendant sought to leave the victim economically worse off. Under this theory, a defendant commits fraud whenever he induces a victim into a contract or other transaction under materially false pretenses. And that's exactly what Alpha and Cosesis did here, the government argued. After all, they had lied about their plans for obtaining Alpha's paint supplies. And had PennDOT known the truth, it wouldn't have awarded Alpha the painting contracts. If it had, it likely would have violated federal law. The district court and the Third Circuit agreed with the government. Both courts held that the fraudulent inducement theory is a legitimate basis for securing a wire fraud conviction. As the Third Circuit put it, Alpha and Cosesis had set out to obtain millions of dollars that they would not have received but for their fraudulent misrepresentations. We agree with the courts below. The fraudulent inducement theory is consistent with the text of the wire fraud statute, the common law, and our precedent. So we reject petitioner's argument that a fraud conviction requires the government to prove that the defendant aimed to inflict economic loss. Start with the statute. it prohibits devising or intending to devise a scheme to obtain money or property by means of false or fraudulent pretenses. Alpha and Cassisis' scheme plainly satisfied each of these elements. They devised a scheme to induce PennDOT to award them painting contracts and in turn to obtain PennDOT's money by falsely representing their plans for acquiring Alpha's paint supplies. And while it's true that Alpha and Cassisis provided something in return, painting, high quality painting, that doesn't matter. After all, the statute uses the phrase money or property, and money or property is no less obtained simply because something else is given in return. Petitioners next urge us to look to the common law of fraud. Common law courts, they say, have long required fraud victims to prove that they sustained economic loss. Not so. At common law, fraud was a word of many meanings. And while some courts required economic loss in some circumstances, the general rule was that a fraud was complete when the defendant induced the victim to hand over her money or property under materially false pretenses. In other words, no economic loss required. And that's enough to render the common law unhelpful to Alpha and Cassisis. Finally, petitioners say that the fraudulent inducement theory is inconsistent with our precedent. Again, they're wrong. In fact, we have twice rejected the argument that a fraud conviction depends on economic loss. And while our precedent sets forth a number of rules about the interests that federal fraud statutes protect, the fraudulent inducement theory is in harmony with those rules. It is not, as petitioners argue, in tension with them. Nearly a century ago, the esteemed Judge Learned Hand wrote that a man is nonetheless cheated out of his property when he is induced to part with it by fraud, even though he gets a quid pro quo of equal value. We agree. Because the Third Circuit's judgment comports with the federal wire fraud statute and our precedent interpreting it, we affirm. Justice Thomas has filed a concurring opinion. Justice Gorsuch has filed an opinion concurring in part and concurring in the judgment. And Justice Sotomayor has filed an opinion concurring in the judgment.
In Oklahoma Statewide Charter School Board versus Drummond and the consolidated case, numbers 24394 and 24396, the judgment of the Oklahoma Supreme Court is affirmed by an equally divided court. Justice Barrett took no part in the consideration or decision of these cases. Mr. Clerk, the court will entertain motion for admission to the bar of the court.
Michael Bekisha.
Mr. Bekisha.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, I move the admission of Catherine Brooke Blankenberg of the Bar of the District of Columbia. I am satisfied she possesses the necessary qualifications.
Your motion is granted. Ms. Blankenberg will be admitted.
Andrea Sainz.
Ms. Sainz.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, I move the admission of Susan Ansari of the Bar of the State of Maryland. I am satisfied that she possesses the necessary qualifications.
Your motion is granted. Ms. Ansari will be admitted.
Roy Engler.
Mr. Engler.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, I move the admission of Paul Francis Brisky of the Bar of the State of Maryland. I am satisfied he possesses the necessary qualifications.
Your motion is granted. Mr. Brisky will be admitted.
Kenneth Casper.
Mr. Casper.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, I move the admission of my son, Brian Edward Casper, of the Bar of the State of New Jersey. I am satisfied he possesses the necessary qualifications.
Your motion is granted, and your son will be admitted.
Elizabeth Slattery.
Ms. Slattery.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, I move the admission of Joshua Martin Robbins of the Bar of the Commonwealth of Virginia. I am satisfied he possesses the necessary qualifications.
Your motion is granted, and Mr. Robbins will be admitted.
A group of attorneys from Fordham University School of Law, presented by Dean Joseph Landau.
Dean Landau.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, I move the admission of the following attorneys. From the state of New Jersey, Susan Asatainley Long. And from the state of New York, Michael Carl Barnes, Robert Frederick Brower, Samuel Plant Chapin Dengramond, Gwendolyn Galef, Gary Edward Hanna, Katarina Huzus, Elizabeth Tweedy McMorris, Maria Esther Ochoa Ramos, Ingrid Borges Perez, Laura Jirachi Rodriguez, Christopher Sean Ross, Nazmas Saqib, and David John Torrenti. I'm satisfied that each possesses the necessary qualifications.
Your motion is granted, and the applicants will be admitted.
A group of attorneys from Texas Tech University School of Law, presented by Keith Lauerman.
Mr. Lauerman.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court, I move the admission of the following attorneys: Melissa Ryan Chapa, Denise Deanne Hernandez, John Foster McIntyre, Jaime Danilo Pasantes, James Cargill Skinner, and Thomas Grant Woodby. I'm satisfied that each possesses the necessary qualifications.
Your motion is granted, and the applicants will be admitted.
A group of attorneys from the Federal Bar Association, presented by Glenn McMurray.
Mr. McMurray.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, I move the admission of the following attorneys: from the state of Illinois, James Herschel Dowdy III. From the state of New York, Christy Rita McGinnis. From the state of Ohio, Garrett Michael Anderson and Emily Rose Qualheim. From the state of Virginia, Ryan Michael Bates. I'm satisfied each possesses the necessary qualifications.
Your motion is granted, and the applicants will be admitted.
Thank you.
A group of attorneys from the Mercer County, New Jersey Bar Association, presented by Brian Shea.
Mr. Shea.
Thank you. Mr. Chief Justice, and it may please the court, I move the admission of the following attorneys, all of the state of New Jersey: Joseph Christus Antonikakis, John Michael Carbonara, Jenna Marie Casper Bloom, Rebecca Rose Colon, John A. Ferner, Christian Edward Fisher, Hillary D. Freeman, Aisha Krishna Hamilton, John Connor Lowenberg, Carl Robert Luthenberg, Angelo Joseph Onofre, Georgia Darcy Reed, and Matthew Joseph Solon. I am satisfied each possesses the necessary qualifications.
Your motion is granted, and the applicants will be admitted. If all the applicants will stand, the clerk will administer the oath. But before he does so, I would like to extend to each of you a warm welcome as a member of the bar of this court and an officer of the court.
Raise your right hand, please. Do you solemnly swear that as an attorney and as a counselor of this court, you will conduct yourself uprightly and according to law, and that you will support the Constitution of the United States, so help you God?
The Honorable Court is now adjourned until Thursday, the 29th of May at 10 o'clock.